really like
okay.
you. As I was saying, if I have been treated differently because of race, it's something that's not to my awareness, because, like I said a while ago, I don't go on looking for phantasmas. It may be there, and it may have happened, but I'm not really observing. And that just as an example I mentioned to you, that was one occasion we were at Tambal or Tamburele, whichever one is in Obabio. We were eating with a group of friends from the church. And we were sitting on a table, and suddenly one of the women that was with us turned, looked around and said, "You don't realize we're the only blacks that are in here?" And I said, "You know, so what's the point? Yeah, all of them around us are Italians or white." I said, "Well, I'm going to observe each one when they pay, and if they pay with a bill that is a different color or a different domination than I pay, then I'd be worried. But if they pay with the same, you know, things like that, like people going out and looking at a billboard and say the billboard discriminates because it doesn't have a black face on it, or walk into a business establishment and say, 'No, well, I'm not going to buy here because they don't employ blacks,' and, you know, I don't discriminate those things that rapidly. I go what I go about, and then, I mean, if you bring my attention to it, then I will notice it, but I don't really go on looking. Again, if someone has treated or discriminated against me, I don't really sense it. But the other thing is, in the religious field, you don't really feel discrimination. When people go to a church to do a service, they don't really, or mostly don't look at the color of the clergy that's doing it. I mean, I've done services for people that are white. I've done services for people that are white, meaning in the U.S. once, of all white Americans. I've done services in Panama, wedding service for people that are all Latins, and no one has come to the church and asked them, I mean, shy away after, because the school was a black clergy. So, and we speak about locally, but one of the remarkable things I've told folks, I remember being in the U.S. a couple of years ago. I flew into my sister lives in New Jersey, so I fly into Newark, the Continental, and then I take the train, to take a train today, you know. And of course, when you travel, you have, and now I know they charge you for all the bags, you know, you take like 3 bags. And I got to the train station, I had to make a transfer in the evening rush hour, maybe about 5 o'clock. There was a guy, a white man, on the platform with a well-suited, it must have been a businessman, a well-suited with his travel. Train came and stopped, and without me even saying to him, he said, "I'm on a head train." He picked up the heaviest bag, and he went on the train. He said, "Okay, I need," and I'm gone. And I said, "Well," and that's the only time anyone has ever offered me an helping. And it was a white man, so can I say I've been discriminated against? Me? But when you say these things, you say, "Well, you're only looking at that smart." Well, you ask me about my personal feeling, and that has been my experience. So I never felt I've been discriminated against for any reason, neither race, physical difficulties, or anything of the sort.
Okay. Have you ever lived outside of Panama, abroad at all?
A short stay.
Okay. So just visited.
Just visited.
Okay.
Sometimes I visit so often that it would be just as if they lived here, because like I was telling this medical team group that were here from North Carolina 2 weeks ago, I was telling them that I think it was the year before the last, it was about 2 or 3 years ago, in which in 1 year I traveled 17 times to the United States. So I mean, put together, that's just like being here 4 or 5 months. So, you know, you go 3 days, you're back for a week, you go again. And if you go to the same place, it becomes like a routine, just as if you live there. I get to where my sister lives, and I know exactly what to do, where to go, where to buy, where the stores are, the numbers, you know. So, sometimes you haven't lived here physically. You haven't been there long enough for it to be considered a physical residence, but you have been there so often, you get tied into the things that it's actually like you have been living there.
How has knowing English affected you, whether positively or negatively?
Only positively, never negatively. Never, I don't know what. Again, if they have called me trouble for speaking English, so what. But positively, it has been great, because I do a lot of interpretation and translation. In fact, part of my visit with the medical team when they were here was that, you know, I did, and they even asked me, "So you studied in, are you in the United States?" And I said, "No." So all of my accent, because I know that we have an accent. I said, "No." And most of my formal education was in Spanish also. But they said, because they would say something, I would pick up on it, I could interpret it into English or Spanish right away without any delay or any hesitation. But not praising myself, but I think I'm very good at interpreting and translating. My son is a certified translator, he has a license, so I don't, but so trust me, some of the things he sends to me, I tell me, "Well, do you say this, or do you know?" Because he knows of my past experience.
Is this medical team you did translation for Dr. Belizaire's group that came down?
No, I didn't know Dr. Belizaire was here.
Oh, yeah, he did in May. I know he was here, and I don't know if he's come back.
Dr. Belizaire's one was a sport.
He was a chiropractor, I believe he was.
I know a Dr. Belizaire. I haven't seen him for 40 years, but because Florence Belizaire, who is passed, who was my sister.
All right. Okay, now family questions. Mm-hmm. Are you married, and how did you meet your wife?
I met my wife when I'm at university, yes, Mariela. And it was really a black, honestly a black group of first people that I knew from El Bravo, and then we got together people from, if you're from Paraiso, we go to Panama and show you, and of course, students who studied with you, and we used to have other cafeteria, and wherever there was parties, we'd always be here.
But what's she studying?
Nurse, my wife is a nurse. She's a nurse in charge of nursing, not the director, she's a nurse in charge of nuclear value in the area.
How would you characterize the cultural background of your spouse? Was she West Indian?
No, my wife is West Indian, and like I said, one of the things with it, me being in the Episcopal Church, other than being accepted, I started going to the Episcopal Church through my in-laws, my wife and my in-laws, and so I got involved with them, observing my inclination or the ministry. My mother-in-law sang and still sing when she's able because she's somewhat poor at St. Paul's. My father-in-law has been the senior warden of the vestry for many years. My sister-in-law used to sing in a new choir. I think my wife said I worked in a new choir. My sister and my brother were acolytes in the church, so they practically were always, and St. Paul's is really a in the church. My father-in-law worked and was retired from the United States Air Force. He worked for the Purchase and Accounting Department. My mother-in-law is a domestic engineer. They are always West Indian based and West Indian. They all speak English. We go English, so they all speak Spanish. Just as our children.
Well, do you have children? And tell me about them, their lives, their jobs. How many children?
We have two children. I have an adopted daughter in the U.S., but we don't really deal on that. It's not an adopted daughter because of a sex relation. It's just a niece that my wife doesn't even enjoy the unit of people in my job. And for some personal reason, they treat her as an adopted daughter. But we have two children. Tanisha is, and every time I say Tanisha, it's born in 1976, so she's 32 years of traffic in Balboa. 10-month-old son, Kyle Jamil. You know my son, right?
I met him once, right before he got married. He came over with his fiance to meet him with my mom.
Yes. And their son, Rick. And his Rick is R-Y-K, and that has another long history behind it. Let me finish sort of this random idea about the Rick point. He's a mechanical industrial engineer. He has quite a lot of tarifas, I don't know if you call it tariffs of corporate here. Like, married, lives in Vista del Gordo, but no children as yet. Or like he, because in my father's line of the family, well, my father's always said, my wife's side of the family, they're boy king and boy king and boy king and boy king, and they did it. One is boy Wesley, one is Wesley boy, because they know that kind of stuff. We had our first son who died at 9 months' birth. And I was the people know it's for not for lack of attention because my wife was in hospital and the baby was in hospital and get all the best attention, but that's what God wanted. Around that time, there was a man named Spiro Agnew. Spiro Agnew was the Secretary General of the. And the name Spiro I just like the name Spiro. So my name, like the first Spiro named Spiro. When my mother-in-law decided that, and my mother-in-law told me that, she said, maybe the child died because of the name I gave him. I just tell people that I'm not accused of killing myself. And she don't say with any keenness, she just. So when my wife has had 6 pregnancies, she has had a low womb problem, but we wanted to have many children. So we ended up with 2 of them. Okay, Barney was insistent, saying, why you don't name him Nelson? So I said, well, name him Nelson, but he will not be a junior. Become Nelson Stephen, too. He will not be a junior. I said, okay, name him Nelson Rick. But to make it different, just like I did with Sparrow, a different name, I said, make it Rick with R-Y-K. So he's Nelson Rick, just on account of spelling Rick different way, R-Y-K. There's not any origin or anything.
Very good. Do they consider themselves Panamanian, West Indian, both, something else?
Yeah, both. They are well identified with the Panamanian culture, but they are well identified with the West Indian.
Do they speak English and new grandchildren?
Mm-hmm. Well, my granddaughter is 8 years of age. She's in San Cristobal. I think her father being all Latin, I don't know, almost. He understands English very well. And I think he can speak it, but he doesn't do it around us. You know, even when we speak to her, we normally speak to her in Spanish. And my son is an international interpreter, translator. He does a lot of working with Pantanal also, you know. Now they might do some work in Spanish, but maritime language is English, so she does everything in English.
Why do you think it is that all your children and your grandchild is on her way to speaking English? Have you ever talked to them about their choice of choosing to continue strong with both Spanish and English and so forth?
No, never, because it is evident that it's here. I just know that they were not. And one of the things that my wife said, my granddaughter all the time, you need to make sure you learn English and hope for that. The more languages you speak, the better it is for you. So it was really such a topic. But again, I'm not finding it necessary because they are already inclined to, you know, to that.
Okay. Do you have any family who live overseas? And if so, where do they live?
All my siblings live in the U.S. All my siblings are U.S. citizens by now. My brother lives in the Virginia, Manassas, Virginia area. The only brother I have is this. Three sisters and two brothers. One, my oldest sister is my mom's child, and my dad's child. Not step sister, half sister, but she's still a sister. We don't use it as half nor step. But the oldest one lives in Jacksonville, Florida. She lives in Orange Park, which is right 2 minutes from Jacksonville. People are more acquainted with Jacksonville than Orange Park. One sister lives in South Jersey, Ocean, Jersey. One sister lives in Los Angeles, California. Then my brother's in the Manassas, Virginia area. My cousins live all over. My wife, Paulissa, my wife's sister, my sister-in-law lives in New York. Rita lives in New York. Her daughter lives in Delaware. One of my sister's daughter lives in Georgia. One lives in, Atlanta, Georgia, anyway. So they're somewhat kind of spread out. And I have good friends all over the U.S. I have friends in, the lawyers are in Chicago. I have an ex-teacher that is in Missouri, and I've never been to Maine, but my wife has an uncle who lives in Boston. But yes, all my siblings, so when I went to the U.S. in April, I went to Panama, Newark for 2 days by my sister, then I flew down to Georgia for 2 days by my niece, then I flew all the way across to Los Angeles with my sister for 2 days, and you know, they're all over the U.S., from East Coast to West Coast, from North to South.
When they come to visit Panama, do you think other Panamanians see or treat them as less Panamanian or more American?
No, they're treated the same, both as Pan-Americans, if you want to call it. It's not a... See, the people we mostly deal with are our people, which are in the same category. I mean, we go out and we meet friends, or maybe some of our friends might be married to a Latin or so, but no, it's not the sort of social function that will invite that sort of questioning of behaviors. They're here because it's a family reunion, they're here because carnival or fitness party, a sort of class reunion, and more a time of fun and operational to get together as a family. So they've not been here, like, for instance, for conventions or congresses that has to do with ethnic.
Okay. Have you ever been abroad or lived overseas? Where and when? You said you have traveled, no?
Yeah, but not lived. Because I've not, like, studied that. You can say it was a last semester or anything. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What specific message do you want to communicate to the younger people of the community?
Okay, that's... You say what slides my document? I have a little problem with this, and I go more at the Episcopal youth than at anything. For I mentioned I commented to you when we came in this morning about the moral behavior in Episcopal Church. The moral behavior in Episcopal Church very lacking, and it stems from what you know has occurred at high levels that it feeds over to the children. I have had a serious encounter with the students of the diocese last year. One of them, well, it's a threat. He didn't give me a physical threat, but he said, you know, tú me estás buscando, tú me puedes encontrar, because he thought I was aiming at him. And one of the comments that I did when I wrote a note to them, and I said, we have activities all the time in the church. We invite the youth from the Methodist community, and I never see the Episcopal Church about that. Neither that participates as a group when we have an activity, nor do we see the same way we invite other denominations youth into our church, but we don't see them inviting, because if they even invite us, we aren't prepared to do so. If we have an activity, what kind of music that you're playing? Pásame la botella, traigo. I know the song. Let me tell you, because I did a funeral service here a couple months ago, and at the end I said, gracias a Dios. And I stopped and I started to sing, you know that song, right? Pero gracias a Dios, ya te olvidé, ya tengo otra que se preocupa por mí. Pero gracias a Dios, ya me olvidé. And I started singing about the song, and then I said, I know all those songs. Don't think I don't know them. I don't sing them because they're not uplifting. You know, but that is the kind of music that our Episcopal is. If you play that, they will sing their hearts out to the top of their voice. We have an activity yearly with the girls' home, the anniversary, and the St. Christopher Day, family day, they sell food, and the girls on the home for a presentation. You can imagine what the dance is. But all these songs, they shake and they dance and they wiggle and they go down and they go on the floor. And I said, you know, while it might be the modern behavior, and some dances because of African origin, you make certain movements, but then little girls should be careful of certain gestures and a certain dress really use when you do these. And if that's all you learn, you know, what is goes on always? As African descendants at school, but as church, there is a lot of dances, there's a lot of songs, and the kind of music, because they don't dance into typical African music, I can say it's these reggae with all these bulls, and the singing and the dancing and the acting, you know. So, I called their attention and I said, well, we need to, you know, speak about this and start teaching about what we can do as Episcopal youth and so forth. And one of the students, one of the boys, decided that he think I was getting at him, and if I was looking for him, I would find him. But my recommendation to the youth in the community and the Episcopal Church is that we need to look a lot at our attitudes and behavior and try to change it. I remember once, several years ago, back, okay, so Nashon is 30 years of age now, but when he was of age in which all his schoolmates were quinceañeras, was going to all his 15-year parties, you know, some of these activities, parents get invited because his children participate. And I remember once we went to Casa Periodista, and anywhere to a farmer's, and he dressed to match the occasion. He had on a suit. And we got there, and all the other guys had on the jeans and the big sneakers. And I thought my son would shy away from them, you know. And he said, no, but what am I sitting on my job with them? And they would know that my parents brought me up with a certain teaching and setting that. And they never arrested him. They see. In fact, as the leader of the youth, they look up to him. You know, he has never been shy, like, okay, what they want to say about me. My son has always been like this. If he comes to me and says, like, okay, I need a pair of sneakers for gym, and I said, how much the sneakers cost? He would say, give me what you have and I will get something for that price. Él nunca ha dicho, yo quiero Nike, yo quiero Adidas, no. I mean, we've made good salaries, and we try to not to make him feel less than, which he doesn't see. He says, if you follow them and put them and go and play among them, drinking. When my kids go to parties, and I still get upset about it, they will not go on this, you know, Papa, yeah, my man. I say, all right, we'll leave you at this time. No, you carry me. They need to know that parents that take care of me, and you leave me at the door. And when I'm ready, I will call and you come and pick me up, I carry my food. And if we tell the children that you'll be here till 11, nothing about, they will call us at 11. They're not going to say, well, you know, the party beginning at 11. Sometimes we have a simple set. If we tell them to stay, then they will stay. They will see us. We have not had that sort of form. Let me thank you for that. They are very, very right in that sort of form and behavior. So I do believe that we have done the proper thing in instructing them and including them. I tell my son all the time, you need to translate this message, not only in your behavior, but also orally to the groups, since you are one of the leaders. Muchas veces la cosa es lo que muchachos dicen, ah, tú eres un viejo, los tiempos cambian. You know, no vamos a escuchar ese Dios, que es Dios que se cree y que no nos manda, vaya a mandar a su casa. But no, I get along pretty good with the church.
Okay, okay. Are you involved in any other community groups or organizations? And if so, what roles do you play in those other groups?
Well, I'm a vice president in one of the chapters of the retired NARC, which is the National Association of Retired Federal. A lot of work as master of ceremonies and activities. Even if not belonging to some groups that invite me to be a member of any particular group at this point. At church level, I'm the leader of this church. I'm the president of this. My advisor is the bishop. I'm what they call the directores, who are the people that should oversee the finances of the budget. That's the top secret, but I'm still a member of that committee. That, not any specific groups or societies, belong to all at large, but none as a specific member.
And last but not least, is there anything else, any additional information you want to include that we have not yet touched upon?
No, I don't have any other. Or if you have anything else you'd like to know, you can be more comfortable as a better interview at this time than the first time.
I'm glad.
But the thing is, strangely, when I saw these questions, you know, I thought that a lot of the answers of the first interview were like silly answers. But when I reread it, and again the same thing about the Adams, the insect, it really was my reality. I mean, after the interview, I just didn't know how valuable the information I'd given to sort of, because my main concern was giving them negative ideas, you know, telling them to go, instead of studying, go and play with insects. But that is my reality. That was my reality. There's no way I can go into the past and get rid of it. And I've overcome it all, so, you know, so what's the point? Plus, you told me I'm here, yes.
I have a few things for you in the car, actually. I'm glad you reminded me.
I just remember the TV car you spoke about, and I never thought it. I never wanted it. I probably never looked at it. I wanted to fall in the bucket to not to see that feel stupid.
No. That's for you. You can do what you like with it. But I'll just thank you again for participating. And again, feel perfect us. Anytime. You have my email, my number.
Oh, your number, right. I just registered on my cell phone. You call, I say that away. And I actually
Well, once she's here, then it's her. I'm going to put this on style.